This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's going on? This is Metal Shop's Backstage Pass, and right now I'm actually speaking with someone that you've probably heard of from now, if not from his sick metal band Greyhawk, who you should have seen by now, and if not, you're definitely going to want to see them. They're going to be talking about an upcoming show they have, but it's sold out, so you're going to want to get your ass on StubHub to get yourself a secondhand ticket or something. But we'll get to that in just a few. This guy has been all over the news recently, a true hero of heavy metal, and that's me saying it. It's not him. So it's me saying it. I will say that. And a true hero for heavy metal. And this isn't some unbiased journalism take. I am his friend. So this isn't going to be, you know, some, you know, totally unbiased thing. This is a friend talking to a friend, but wanting to get the real story in long form about the crazy incident that happened over in Boise, Idaho, Sunday night, September 5th, at a venue called The Shredder, outside of The Shredder. And there was a shooting, and there was what could have been a lot worse. But first off, welcome to the podcast, Darren. How are you doing? This is Darren Wall, by the way.
That is me. Thank you, Kevin. I'm doing okay, man. You know, just trying to do my recovery stuff day to day. And, you know, try not to get too bored being kind of stuck in the house. I did get out today and went and saw my friends at work. So I kind of popped by work for a bit and, you know, got outside in the fresh air. So that was nice. But, you know, just trying to take it day by day and hopefully I'll be back on my feet before too long.
So you said that you left the house for the first time. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So that, I mean, that in and of itself, you know, I know a lot of us are concerned and you know, we're worried and wanted to get updates on you. And I told some people that I had lunch with you, you know, you look like your spirits are good and you're healing. But so you're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable and heal up.
Yeah. You know, I still can't walk. You know, I actually did accidentally put weight on my left leg the other day and I went right to the ground. Like I fell right over. It's not supporting any of my body weight at the moment, but mobility gets better literally every day. I can flex the leg a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, when I move around on the couch, it gets a little better. The first day back, I couldn't, every time I move, I'd just be screaming and grunting and, you know, in a real bad way. So, you know, now I can kind of be, I'm a little more comfortable in different positions. I can sit up here, you know, in my chair, talk to you, and I'm not in any serious pain. So that's good.
So if you don't mind, this is, you know, obviously probably like the 60,000th time you've had to kind of go over the situation. And I hate to bring it up because it's probably not something you really want to play back in your head, but just to kind of set the scene, you guys had already played the show?
Yeah. So to set the scene, basically, several months prior, I got a message from a promoter and a musician over in Boise. You know, I guess he just, you know, we befriended each other on Facebook, and he'd heard the music and, you know, had been playing it for some people around there. And he's like, people are loving it. So he asked us and another awesome Seattle band called Command to come and play in Boise. So, you know, we talked about it and worked out the logistics. And, you know, right now there's not a lot of places doing too many shows. So we basically we were trying to get another show, which in hindsight, on either Friday or Sunday or both, which in hindsight probably is a good thing we didn't. But, you know, we couldn't find anything. But we said, you know, what the hell? Like, let's go do this show in Boise. I've visited there before. Yeah. Yeah, I like the city. You know, this guy says it's going to be a good gig. Let's go check it out. So,
and it was on your birthday, which is a cool.
It was.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah. It was on my 41st birthday. I'm like, yeah, I take a road trip to Boise with my buddies on my 41st and, you know, play a rock and roll show and have a lot of fun. So, you know, we loaded up the day of the show early morning. You know, we drove a good solid eight hours, eight and a bit, whatever it takes to get there. And, you know, we got there. It was, everything was pretty normal. It's an awesome venue. It's got a real big stage. Huge thumping sound system.
Nice.
Dude, they got the old WWF WrestleMania arcade game.
Nice.
Where it's
WrestleFest.
Like a
fast.
Yeah, where you're the tag team, you're trying to get to the Million Dollar Man and Andre the Giant.
Nice.
That game is so hard. I forgot how hard that game is. It's so hard.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I was stoked. I was playing the hell out of that game. And yeah, so the opening bands went on. They were really good. Command went on. They were awesome. It was the best Command set I'd ever seen them play.
Nice.
You know, we went up there. We absolutely had a killer set. I mean, some nights you just don't know how it's going. It's hard to tell. This night I was like, everything was clicking. You know, I did my steel bar bending stunt.
Yep.
Did that. That went over really well. And, you know, people ate. We got an encore and people were eating it up. So
hold on. Let me pause one second. If you've never been to a Greyhawk show, Darren bends steel. So you're not watching this interview. He is a beefy man. He is very large. He is a strong man. He does strong man feats of strength with all kinds of ridiculous weight. And on stage, I've actually never seen this, but I've seen video of it. So describe exactly what you do.
So it's inspired by Thor, who's a good guy who was doing metal in the 80s. So what I'll do is grab I usually use a half inch pressed welded steel bar. I just basically will wrap it in a rag and put it in my teeth and grab each end and use my lower jaw as a fulcrum and then bend the steel bar into a horseshoe.
So brutal.
It's a fun little extra. You know, we have lots. If you come see Greyhawk, we have lots of little extra things we do. We have lineups. Yeah. We have lineup wizard staffs and, you know, stage choreography and, you know, smoke bombs and fog and you get a show.
Anyways, keep going with the story. Yeah, I just had to pause there because we can't just brush over that for anyone who's not familiar. I just needed to make sure people understood what you were doing literally like an hour from what would end up happening. So anyways.
So we got off stage and there and you know, there was one more band to play and, you know, the people there were awesome. I mean, we were selling lots of merch and people were wanting us to sign merch and take pictures. And it was a really good feeling. It was really like Boise's metal community is real tight.
Yeah.
You know, that they it seemed like everybody loved each other. Everyone knew each other. Everyone was friends. And, you know, there was just a real big party happening. So the last band finishes and, you know, we're kind of figuring out what's going to go on with the rest of the night. And, you know, there were some locals who were like, yeah, let's go hang out someplace and whatever. So we're all kicking it. And you know, everyone loads their gear out.
Yeah.
And at the Shredder, behind the venue, there's like a patio area and there's like some picnic benches and it's like an outdoor covered area. So everyone was hanging out back there. Mm-hmm. And there's a parking lot to the south. It's like if you open there's one door to open from the patio and you go out to a parking lot. So at this point, the bar's closed, you know, venue shut. And I'm sitting there hanging out with some people, and one of the guys from command said to me, "Hey, Darren, there's like a guy outside. He's, you know, he's acting like an asshole. We got to keep an eye on him. Can you help us keep an eye on him?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So, you know, I was like, I kind of got up and went and kind of just poked my head outside. And, you know, I'll deal with people who are drunk and belligerent. Like you said, I'm a fairly large man, but I don't throw my weight around. You know, yeah. I'm not a violent guy. I don't go looking for fights. I don't go looking for situations where I can get physical with people. That's not my MO. So, I looked and I expected to see the thing you usually see when someone's drunk and belligerent, some loud, drunk jackass who's just yelling and screaming, and you know there's people
making a scene,
blah blah blah. And they're full of hot air. This was immediately really different. This guy wasn't loud. He wasn't obnoxious. He was quiet. He was talking to people and he was being belligerent, but I would describe it as a cold arrogance. Like, he was really cold and he had this look about him like, "I could do whatever I want to you people."
Wow.
You know, he was definitely tripping hard. So I went out and we locked eyes for a minute and he kind of was taken aback by me standing there.
Sure.
And, you know, but it seemed like everything was relatively under control. So I was kind of hanging back.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point he turned around to leave and I was like, okay. So I kind of walked backwards, but I was still watching him. And he's heading towards his car. I need to reiterate this right now before I go any further, that this guy was not at the show. He was not an audience member.
Yep.
He didn't show up with a premeditation of like being in this venue at all. He wound up there likely by random happenstance.
Had nothing to do with the metal community. Yeah.
Nothing to do with the metal community, nothing to do with the venue, nothing to do with anybody that was there. He was completely on his own accord. So he goes back to his car and I'm thinking, okay, this is gonna blow over. But on his way back to the car, he stops and he does this. For the people who are listening to this and not looking at video, I'm making a finger gun motion and pretending to shoot bullets. He basically made a finger gun motion and pretended to shoot rounds into the crowd, of which there was probably, I'd say, 15 to 25 people left at this point.
Yeah.
And these people are all in this area.
The patio area. The
patio. Yeah. One way in, one way out.
Yep.
That is what we call a shooting gallery. There's you know, so I was like, okay, this could be serious.
Yeah.
He got back in his car and I was like, "God, please just drive away. Please just drive away."
Mm-hmm.
He got out of the car again, and this time he's got a backpack on. And I was like, we're in for some. This is not going to go well. So there was a young lady sitting next to me. And I said to her, I was like, "Call the police now." And she's like, "What am I? Just call the police." And at this point, I got up and I left the patio area and went outside to the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way in hell I'm letting this guy in the venue. Because if this guy gets in the venue, you know, it's target practice, basically. So he's confronted again by another individual, same guy that stopped him from entering the first time. This time, you know, I was at this point, I'm still hanging back a bit. I really couldn't hear anything anyone was saying to him.
Mm-hmm.
But a few people tried to kind of appease him and talk him down. But this one guy was basically saying, at one point, just like, "Get the fuck out of here, man. You got to go. Get out of here. You got to go." So it was escalating. And as it was escalating, I was moving a little bit closer. And I kind of took up a position in the doorway to the gunman's right, and the other guy's left, if I was to look at it from a different perspective. So the argument escalates, and basically this guy gets close, and the guy who was keeping him out of the bar pushed him, right? Mm-hmm. Pushed him backwards because the guy was trying to force his way into the bar. So they kind of square off like they're going to fight, and that is when I was moving in, kind of keeping an eye on things, and then I saw him take the gun out.
Mm.
At this point, he produces the pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's when I moved in. So he started pulling it out of his, I don't know if it was in his pocket or his back pocket or his belt. I didn't see really where it came from. I just saw it come into his hands. So at that point, I took two steps and I kicked him as hard as I could in the inside of his right leg. The purpose of that was to try to throw him off balance. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I got my body in between him and the rest of the audience, and I shoved him backwards. And as he was going backwards, he had the gun in his pocket, and he squeezed off one shot. Oh. And that shot went through his pants and hit me in the upper part of my left leg. So at which point, I dropped.
Yep.
I got back up, probably because of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. I called him something real nasty that I won't repeat here.
Sure.
And he got spooked either by me or the fact that he shot someone, or I don't know if he saw a police officer or what. Yeah. He got spooked and he ran. And he was falling all over the place as he ran away. And at that point, my guitar player, she grabbed me. She's like, dude, come with me. You've been shot. And I was like, oh, yeah? I'm like, oh, yeah? And she goes, yeah, you've been shot. I'm like, well, shit. So she dragged me over and put me in the back of a vehicle. And she took her hoodie off and she tied it around the top of my leg like a tourniquet. Try to stop some bleeding. The police were there within seconds. Mm-hmm. Because they were in the area looking for this guy. Because this guy had been driving around the streets of Boise and he'd been pulling his gun out, showing it to people from his car.
Jesus Christ.
So they were looking for him and they were just probably about 30 feet in the wrong location. So they heard the gun go off and they were there pretty quick. My drummer is also a parole officer. So he was basically coordinating the cops.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, one victim here. You need a medic. He's like, stop whatever you're doing. Just call a medic immediately. So, and he's like, the guy ran off that way. Somebody needs to call a medic though. So then they call a medic and I was just kind of sitting there, you know, it wasn't bleeding too bad. It was bleeding. But it wasn't bleeding too bad. And at the time, I really wasn't. My leg felt weird, but I didn't have a lot of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurt. But it was like, one of the cops asked me, he says, so does it hurt? And I said, yeah, it hurts. I got a bullet in my leg. What do you think? It tickles? he was like, well, yeah, I would just, you know, it's a standard question I have to ask you to make sure that, you know, you can still feel your leg. I'm like, oh yeah. So I was able to move my knee and move my extremities and wiggle my toes. So they're like, okay, you know, you haven't done anything super crazy. It doesn't look like there's any like mobility damage. Mm-hmm. So the medic showed up and they put me on a gurney and they threw me in the back of an ambulance. And they took me to, I won't say a local medical facility, but you know, the wrestling fans will get that inside joke. They took me to a hospital. And, you know, the guy who was tending to my wound, in the ambulance was a field medic in Afghanistan
yeah.
for like years. So I felt like I was in about the best hands I could be in. You know,
yeah.
He looked at it. He's like, there's no exit wound. He was like, you know, you're not bleeding that bad. He's like, I think you're going to be okay. But, you know, it's like, I don't think this is life threatening, but you know, whatever. And I was like, yeah, I think I was cracking jokes at the time. And the guy's like, man, you're really handling this well. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? You know, I can't get unshot at this point, so we'll just deal with it as best we can. I don't see blood flying everywhere, so whatever. So I got in the. It was really funny, and I have these like fancy stage pants I was wearing. Like they got lace all the side. So the guy was like, "We got to get that off you because these nurses and the trauma ward are going to cut these pants to pieces if they don't."
No.
So he's like, "They got those pants off of me, and you know they're tending to the wound and whatnot." So they got me in there, wheeled me into the hospital, and there was a trauma team prep. They were ready for me. And, you know, we got there and they were like, okay, we don't stop any bleeding. So then they did x-rays and they did that. And they kind of looked around and they said, well, you know, we're going to look at those x-rays and see what we got. So they looked at it and the x-rays looked okay. And then a trauma surgeon came in and he felt around my leg a bit and he used an ultrasound. It sounded like thunderclaps. It was like, it was kind of weird.
Whoa.
So he did an ultrasound all the way through my leg and everywhere. And he's like, you know, where this thing is sitting, he's like, it somehow miraculously missed every artery, every nerve, every like vein it could have possibly missed. And it's just lodged in your quad.
You told me the other day when we had lunch that it was about an inch away.
Inch away from my femoral artery, less than an inch. And if you don't know that, what a femoral artery is, it's the major blood artery in your legs. And it's basically a death sentence. If you sever your femoral artery, you're probably bleeding out where you're at. So I got real, real, real lucky. Yeah. in that respect. So at that point, I was in the hospital and just kind of, I was waiting for a CT scan. Mm-hmm. But they had some other, they had other trauma victims that night too.
Okay.
So that guy's injuries were life threatening. Mine were not. So I had to wait for my CT scan.
Sure.
And, you know, I got to say, like, there was two police officers. I think they felt a little bit bad about the fact that they just didn't get this guy quite in time and I had to jump in and got shot. They stayed with me the entire night.
Yep.
Like, these two officers stayed with me the whole night. And they were watching Greyhawk videos on their phones, which is
That's pretty cool.
And all the hospital staff were asking what the band name was. And they were all, like, looking it up, too, because, you know, they're there overnight. And
yeah.
There's not much going on. So... then they did, finally it was time to do, actually first before the CT scan, it was wild because I didn't want to call home and say anything till the morning because it's 2 a.m. at this point. Word travels fast because I started getting messages from people on Facebook. Some from people who were at the show, which is like, okay, how are you doing? Please tell me you're okay. But some from people back in Seattle. And I'm like, oh my God, this stuff is all over social media already.
You don't want your wife to hear that way.
Exactly. So I had to call home and give her a shout, and that was not a fun conversation.
Yeah.
But they did a CT scan, which was really weird. So a CT scan, they inject you with this dye, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, shows what your veins are doing and whatnot. And it gives you this warming sensation through your whole body. And it warmed a certain part of my body a lot, and I thought I pissed myself. I was they got me, and I went, oh, no. They're like, what? And I'm like, I think I just pissed myself. And they start laughing. They're like, no, that's just the dye. Okay. Don't worry. They're like, you didn't do that. And if you did, we've seen worse.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. So they did that and everything looked clear. So they basically had to, like, hold me for a bit, and get my Medicaid, get meds for me and crutches and a wheelchair and a whole nine. And, you know, then my singer was there. He kind of helped me, wheel me out of the hospital, and we picked up my meds. And I was lucky enough, the drummer from Command, Johnny, who's becoming close. I didn't know him too well before this trip, but he's closely becoming, like, a really good buddy of mine.
Yeah.
I think the world of him. He's got a heart of gold. So he had some family that had a place there, and they just basically took me in for the night.
That's great.
So I got to sleep there in a nice, comfortable bed in the house. I think I bled all over their linens, though, which sucked. I felt bad about that. But, you know, the next day I got up, and basically everyone – from the show was there, and they all worked as a team to figure out how to get me back to Seattle.
Yeah.
And then I got back here on the next day and started recovering.
Where in this process did they keep you updated on what was happening with this maniac? Did they tell you that they had apprehended him?
When I got to the hospital, they told me they got him.
Okay.
So they told me that they had him in custody and in jail at the hospital.
Okay.
When I was on the scene, they told me they had him, but he wasn't cooperating.
Okay.
So they wound up being able to take him into custody, but they cornered him in a parking lot, and he was at the time not compliant with their orders. So, you know, they managed to take him alive, I guess.
I'm not going to say this guy's name because he doesn't deserve any recognition. If you want to find out who this guy is, there's plenty of news stories. You can look it up. You can see his mugshot and all of that stuff. But I wanted to focus more on Darren and just his act of courage. So you're back in Seattle and you start the recovery. Your work, I assume your day job, they're understanding and willing to let you, I'm assuming you, they're totally supportive of you recovering and everything, right?
Yeah, and I want to give a props to my work. I work at a place called Alexander Gow Fire Equipment. It's a fire suppression company. You know, they've been around Seattle since, I think, 1923, you know. So we specialize in marine and commercial fire suppression equipment and kitchen hood cleaning and stuff like that. And I got to give props to my employers. They are the best. You know, they basically are like, you know, we're not taking you off the payroll, you know, for anything for too long anyway, you know, I mean, they're doing their best to pay me, you know, as much as they can and, you know, give me as much time to recover as I need, you know, and they're helping me navigate the medical bill process and everything. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been really well supported at work, but I did have to call my boss on Sunday from the road and be like, so this thing happened. And he was probably like, you know, in the middle, like hanging out with his kids or something on a Sunday.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was definitely like when you call people and tell them that, it's an interesting reaction because they're kind of like, oh, what? You know, like, it's just not a sentence you expect to hear. Like,
yeah,
oh, an active shooter and I took a bullet while trying to stop them. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
And it's kind of been the same thing with customers. Like, there's been customers that come back and, you know, my phone goes off and they're like, hey, what's the deal with this? And I'm like, oh, that kind of fell off my radar. Here's why. And they're like, whoa, dude. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. But yes, I came back and, you know, work has been, you know, nothing, they've been nothing but supportive. I went by today and said hello to everybody. And, you know, it's a very positive place to work. And they've been nothing but awesome through this whole thing.
So you had a very fast and courageous reaction there with the way that you kicked his leg and wrestling fans, you kicked his leg out of his leg.
yes. Awesome.
So you kicked his leg and you tried to subdue him and get him to fall and, you know, break his balance. There's a lot of people here in Seattle that work in venues or work security and they are do active shooter training. Did you ever have active shooter training or something? What made you immediately, you know, react that way? Because I don't think I would react that way. I don't know how I would react.
I do have some. But the thing with an active shooter, when it's someone like this, the main thing you have to do is read their body language. Hmm. And my read from this guy's body language is he's going to shoot. And when I went to intervene, I mean, you see a lot of videos on the internet, all these ninja Krav Maga guys going, blah, like taking people's guns away. I'm here to tell you that that's a bunch of crap. That is absolute bunch of crap. If someone pulls a gun on you, I mean, unless they're going, you know, and they're shaking, yeah, shaking and they're meek, I mean, chances are that thing isn't gonna even be loaded. There's definitely a difference between someone who's producing a pistol and trying to scare you and someone who has a gun and is waiting to use it. This dude has a gun. There was no position I was going to be able to get in to take that gun from him. So I knew I was getting shot.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm being real with you, I 100% knew I was getting shot and I 100% knew I very well could die. But I could not, to quote Spock, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And I could not let him get in that venue and shoot my friends.
Yeah.
It was not an option. So, you know, like, lucky for me, it's the least dirty shirt I could wear was to put him in a position where he couldn't take that gun and aim it at my head or my torso. If I get him going backwards, you know, he's going to have to shoot off balance and he has less of a chance of hitting me. Yeah. So that was my goal, was to put myself in between him and the crowd and get him off balance. And hopefully when he shoots, he'll hit either miss or he'll hit me somewhere that's not vital.
Wow. Thinking fast and also very courageous. That's just mind blowing to think about. It's so scary, but so glad that, you know, you're with us here and you're recovering and you're going to have a full recovery. And I got to say, man, like the metal community and so many people. So this news story, it just went viral and all over the news, local news stories, metal blogs, metal websites, you know, all kinds of, you were on last podcast on the left. They mentioned you, which is probably one of the biggest podcasts as far as like, you know, true crime and paranormal stuff. So they mentioned you on there. And you had a GoFundMe, and I think that, you know, due to the, you know, amount of exposure and the amount of support from the metal community and hard rock community and people that support, it went well above what was needed or asked for.
Yeah. I mean, we asked, awesome. I think we asked for 10K. Mm-hmm. I mean, to cover the unknown, and it's up to about 14, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I want to let everybody know that I'm not going to be pocketing any of that money that I don't need. I'm going to be covering, you know, any kind of expenses when it comes to medical bills, when it comes to rehabilitation, when it comes to time off work I need to take for rehabilitation. But that's going to be what I spend it on. Anything else is, I've picked out a gunshot victim charity. And awesome. every dollar that I don't need is going to that, because GoFundMes to me, they're kind of, I see them as, I've given to a lot of them over the years. I kind of see them as sacred. I kind of see them as, you know, you really need to trust the person you're giving money in. And I don't want to compromise that belief system or that trust system. I want to be, oh, my GoFundMe to be an example of how you do it right. So anything that's not needed to cover any expenses that I have coming up is going to be donated. So everybody that donated, thank you. You know that, you know, whether I need the money or not for my bills, it's going to go somewhere good. And, you know, it's not going to, I'm not going to blow it on beer.
Yeah.
You know, or buy a new car or anything like that. I've got cars and I've got beer and I'm pretty financially comfortable. So,
and you make your own beer anyways. So
yes, sir. I do make my own beer. but yeah, to talk about, like, I mean, I didn't think it was going to go this crazy. Like, I kind of thought that people in the local scene would talk about it. I didn't know that it was going to go how far it did. Basically, like, you know, when I came back, there was a guy from when I came back and I woke up, I guess it would have been Monday the 6th. I woke up, there was a message from a guy in local Boise News who wanted to talk to me.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, sure, man. Like, you know, he's like, because he heard that it happened. I guess there was a police statement issued. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to know what happened. So I told him. And there's also a lot of talk on people's social media. And, you know, I posted a thing like, hey, you might've heard, this is something you might've heard. Here's the story. You know, the Cole's notes of the story.
Yeah.
And so I did that one. And after that, after that story came out, the first people that ran with it were the metal media. I was on it. Loudwire, Metal Injection, Metal Sucks.
Metal Hammer.
Hammer. It hit all those places first. And that's where it started. It went there. And then it was kind of like just insane off the bat. Like, people were just kind of coming out of nowhere. My phone went off from 8 a.m. till 8 a.m. the next day. And then local news got a hold of it. So we had King 5 over at the house. We had Como News over the house. And then that blew up. And there was a lot more people reaching out because of that.
Yeah.
And I can't say enough good things about how the local news guys, so King 5 and Como did. I had a lot of requests of them. I didn't want them to film my wife. I didn't want them to film anything, any parts of my house other than me. I didn't want them filming the outside of my house. I wanted our privacy respected, and they did all of that. They were very professional and very respectful. So that hit, and it was like bonkers for another 2 days. And then it kind of petered out for a bit, you know, and it chilled out, and that was nice. And then last podcast on the left happens, and it's been like blowing up again. So, you know, that's it's fine. You know, it's weird. I'm not used to the attention.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people because I do feel like it's important to take opportunities like you're giving me to tell the story of the actual way it happened. So,
One thing that I don't think was mentioned and you told me, and I think needs to be mentioned, is how much ammo this had.
Yes. So, you know, the thing was, you know, again, when you have a feeling, you know, it's just a feeling and you don't know if you're right or wrong. I mean, this could be a guy who just had a pistol for self-defense or whatever.
Yeah.
He might not have been looking to shoot up a whole bunch of people or anything, but the prosecutor told us that he had another pistol in his backpack and he had four additional loaded magazines, one of which was a 24 round extended drum magazine. So he had enough ammo in that one magazine that if he got in there and everyone was stuck, he could have killed every single person in there. I'm not an anti-gun guy. I'm not going to, you know, run around and tell everybody to, no, you know, don't have a gun in your house for self-defense. Yeah, yeah. But there's nobody who has the kind of self-defense needs that needs to carry around two guns and 80 rounds of ammunition. Okay. That's the guy who is out to do some bad shit.
Yep.
You know, and you know, for whatever reason. So the latest update on him is that he's been deemed mentally unfit to stand trial.
Wow. Okay.
So he is going to be held, and they're going to attempt to rehabilitate him. And if he's able to be rehabilitated, that he'll stand, he'll have another court date on October 15th. If he's not, then he'll be remanded to the custody of a state correctional hospital where he'll be undergoing mental treatment and evaluation for God knows how long, possibly forever.
Wow.
So he's literally a Looney Tune.
Wow.
I mean, if you want to see a good, the best tweet about him that I ever had was from Lich King.
Yeah.
So just go, everyone just go look up Lich King's tweet, Twitter, and they had a hilarious post on the guy because he is a dopey looking bastard. It'll be real.
I think it's safe to say. Well, okay. So you get this, all this support and we're back to this. So I just wanted to mention that because the real gravity of it, you know, we needed to know, but back to where we were. So you're getting all this support and, you know, your story's going out there. I saw a picture of you and your band. You guys were filling some nice orders. It seems like people are not just supporting you and your GoFundMe, but they wanted to help out the band too. And
it did.
Yeah. So tell me about that.
The support that we've gotten from people. I mean, the cool thing is if there's a rub that you're going to get off of it, to use another wrestling term,
is that
people have been like checking it out because of it. And the main comment have been like, you know, I came here because of the story of this bass player, but holy shit, I love this music. Like this band's actually really good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, cool. That's rad. But yeah, we had an obscene amount of orders on the Bandcamp.
That's so cool.
That what you saw, that big old receipt and everything, that was about half of them. We still have to send out. I haven't sent out any of the vinyl yet. And there's about, yeah, so we have to do that all again next week. I'm waiting for more vinyl mailers to show up, basically, because we ran out.
Yeah.
So the support's been absolutely incredible. And, you know, we just put a new t-shirt out there and there's about 60 people that have said they want to pre-order it. So we're going to hold on to those until the gig on the 26th, but we'll probably have to do another run. And so that's cool. You know, if people find our music because of this, I mean, it seems like the world's worst PR stunt, but I don't recommend it. I'd give it all back. I'd give every bit of attention back to get this damn bullet out of my leg and to be able to sleep and to, you know, not have to deal with this crap. But, you know, if there's a, you know, the interesting thing is people have been digging the music, which is nice, you know.
And I love to see it, man. I love that support. I obviously don't love the circumstances, but I love to see the people, you know, going above and beyond to support the band now. And you can go support them at a show that is coming up here on the 26th. It's sold out. It's with a band from Vancouver called Unleash the Archers. Incredible kind of power metal, kind of like mix between metalcore, power metal. I don't even know. Anyways, really, really good. Their last record is incredible. One of my favorites of last year. You guys are going to be opening. There's a few other bands that are on the show. And it is at El Corazon on the 26th Sunday. I'm sure tickets will be available via StubHub. I'm sure someone will be selling tickets or, you know, figure that out. But there won't be any tickets at the door, right? It is 100% sold out.
That's my understanding, is it is 100% sold out. I mean, whether they release more tickets or not, I'm not sure, but sure. You know, there'll be, like I said, there's going to be some people who can't go. So if you want to go, check it out. I mean, Unleash the Archers, yeah, they're a great band. I've actually filled in on bass for them a couple times.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, me and that crew, that we go back to the 2000s. I've known Andrew, Brittany, and Scott and Grant since like 2008 or so.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, my old thrash band in Canada, you know, we used to gig with them a fair bit. So.
That's awesome. It'll be a family reunion.
Yes, absolutely. It's almost fitting that, you know, it is my first show after this happens. It's going to be with those guys. So it's pretty neat.
And, you know, we did have lunch and I keep referencing that. So we had lunch this past weekend and about 40 minutes before I show up to eat or about, 30 minutes or so before I show up to eat with the sandwiches I got, you get a very cool phone call. Why don't you tell me about who you talked to on the phone?
All right. So this started with me going on a radio show from Canada, actually.
Okay.
This guy, Nikki, Omen is his name. He hosts the show in Kamloops, British Columbia. He's a morning show guy on a rock radio station. It's very similar to KISW, actually,
sure. The format. Those so, damn rock radio people.
So he calls me. He's like, hey, dude, like, I'd love to have you on the morning show and interview you. Like, mm-hmm. we'll just, you know, he's like, I can even bring you on live. Just please don't cuss. And I'm like, I can handle that. Yep. So I went on and, you know, we were talking about whatnot. And we got, you know, this, that, I was telling the story. And we got onto the topic of the show that's coming up. And he said, well, hey, man, how are you going to do that? And I'm like, well, I'm going to have to sit down probably. And I made a joke. I said, well, maybe Dave Grohl can lend me his throne from when he broke his leg.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
So, you know, it was just an off color remark I made. Right.
Yeah.
So so Nikki said, you know what? I'm going to tweet them. Like, so he said, he tweeted it out and, you know, hey, Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters, like, you know, check this guy out, right?
Yep.
And then a bunch of other people got on it. Dee Snider got in on the action. Dee Snider retweeted it and everything. So at one point, like, Foo Fighters management, like, notices, and they sent a message to me and this guy via Twitter saying, hey, like, you know, clearly something's going on here. Like, well, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got a call from their manager, and we'll just talk about the whole thing. So
Sure. Basically,
like, I got a call from their manager saying, hey, like, you know, people were talking about, like, you needing to use the Dave's throne or something. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, it's just a joke I made on the radio. And he goes, well, this and that. He goes, well, what the hell happened? So, you know, at this point, you know, I'm happy to talk to you about it. At this point, though, I was like, I had told this story probably like 5 times in the past day. So I was like, dude, I'm just on a level with you. Like, I'm really, really exhausted right now. And I'm tired of telling this story. So when we hang up, I'll just text you a link to the news story and you can see it. And he said, okay. So I texted him a link. And about 20 minutes later, he calls me back. And he's like, hey, you're about to get a call from a California number. It's not a scam. You're going to want to pick it up. And I'm like, well, someone's calling me from California right now. He goes, because to start with, and he tells me the 3 numbers it starts with.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And he goes, bye, pick up that call. And I said, okay. So I answered it. I put on speaker and I said, hello, this is Darren. And he goes, Darren, it's Dave Grohl. And I was like,
oh.
If I didn't recognize his voice, if I wasn't just talking to Foo Fighters management and he didn't sound exactly like he does on every time I've heard him speak, I would just think it's somebody screwing with me.
Yeah.
But it totally wasn't. It was Dave Grohl. He goes, dude, my manager just texted me your story and I watched the video.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, are you okay? So we just started talking about what happened and whatever. And he said, he was just like flabbergasted that happened. And, you know, we talked for a while about the incident. And then he's like, so yeah, like, that throne's just sitting in storage, dude. Like, you want it? And I was like, what? Just like that? He goes, yeah. Like, no one else is using it. So I was like, hey, well, I'm like, well, dude, it's huge. Like, and I mentioned, and luckily for me, I've done kind of my research on Seattle rock history. So I know what El Corazon used to be called. So I was like, well, we're playing the old off ramp. And he goes, oh yeah, of course, man. I've played there a whole bunch of times back in the day. And I was like, well, that's the stage we're on. He goes, well, let's see if we can engineer this thing down to make it fit on that stage.
Yeah.
And as far as shipping it, he's like, I'll just pay for it. I'll send it up to you. And you can use it till you're done with it. So now none of this has happened yet. Okay.
Yeah,
so I don't want to be like, hey, this is a thing. I'll believe it when I see it arrive at my house. But you know, he has verbally agreed to let me use that thing for that show on the 26th, which is really cool. And then we got to talking about, man, we talked about Probot. Because, like, I brought up Probot because I really think that's a cool record.
Yeah.
And then he talked about working with Lemmy. And, you know, we talked about, you know, because Eric Wagner just passed. So we talked about Trouble for a while. And he's just like, it just became a conversation between two pals. Everything you hear about how nice he is 100. I don't know if you've ever talked to him, Kevin.
I haven't.
You've interviewed a lot of guys. But everything you hear about what a cool guy he is 100% true.
Yeah.
Like, It's all legit. This guy called me from the MTV Awards. Like, he was at the VMAs and he took time out to call me. And he spent like almost an hour talking to me on the phone. And he was so cool. Yeah. And, you know, he told me a couple, there's some inside stories he told me about the creation of the throne and mm-hmm. about the VMAs that, you know, might have to stay between us. I don't know if it's the kind of thing he wants out on the air. I've learned that you don't want to repeat stories people tell you all the time.
Yeah, that's their stories, right? That's their stories to share.
But I will tell you one thing he said, and his one thing he said was the last thing he said to me, and it really got me, like, it tugged my heartstrings. And he said, you know, when I read your story, like, I immediately thought of Dimebag Daryl. And he mm-hmm. said, you know, Daryl was a close friend of mine. He's like, he was the sweetest guy that you'll ever meet, that I ever met in my entire life. It's like, he was always the funnest guy in the room, always happy. It's like, he was the nicest guy he ever met in rock and roll. And he said that he wished that I was at the show in Columbus in 2004. And if I was, then maybe his friend would still be there. And that really, really tugged at my heartstrings, man. I'm not the kind of guy that tears up a lot, but I'll freely admit I was sobbing, dude. That was such a heavy thing to have something say to you, because that affected me so much. You know, absolutely. I think that affected everybody, whether you love Pantera or not. I think that affected everybody who remembers it happening. And, you know, whether that factored into my decision making on September 4th, I don't know. But either way, that was just a huge statement from, you know, a rock and roll icon.
Yeah.
And to hear that from a guy like him, that hit me hard, dude. And it was like, you know, damn.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say? It's totally true, though. And I'm glad that, you know, you did what it took, and I will say it again, man, a true heavy metal hero, like a true hero. And, you know, it's very fitting that the heavy metal community is up here to support you, and that we do what, you know, you need as far as the money to help, because insurance covers a lot, but there are other costs. And I'm glad that, you know, the people stood up and they're supporting your band, and they can come support your band again on the 26th. And, man, I'm glad that I was able to give you this platform to give the whole story and not just a little, you know, snippet.
I appreciate it, dude. It's cool to do it. And also for everybody out there, if you can't make our show on the 26th, we're not going to have anything in October because, well, might as well reveal it now. We're going into the studio again in October.
Woo! Nice.
And we're going to bang out a 5-song EP. It's going to be out on Fire Records. It's going to be called Call of the Hawk. And it is 5 real badass old school heavy metal songs. If you like Keepers of the Flame, you're gonna like this one. It's you know, we're changing it up a bit, but we're definitely not straying from the formula, so to speak. But on November 10th, we are opening for Raven at the Funhouse.
Killer.
So we will be doing a game. I've gigged with Raven before, and I know I've spoken with John Gallagher quite a bit over the years, so I'm really looking forward to seeing them again. And that's, if you haven't seen Raven live before, man, you really got to come check them out. They're a blast. They, like, these guys have so much energy, and I'm really looking forward to that. So if anyone can't make it to the show on the 26th because it's sold out, mm-hmm. There's tickets available for the show with Raven in November.
Awesome, man. Well, dude, I super appreciate it. I'll be at both of those gigs, and you know, I'm sure I'll see you around when you're up to get mobile, or you're mobile and you're walking around, or maybe if you're not, I'll come bring you some more banh mi sandwiches. Dude, we'll watch some wrestling.
This guy knows where to get the banh mi sandwiches. I can tell you that. Those were great sandwiches.
We're gonna end things here with a song by Greyhawk, if that's okay, if you don't mind.
It's more than okay. Love.
All right, man. Let's do it. What song should we play here as a bit of a starter pack for the fans people who are listening because they're curious about the story, but they don't know Greyhawk? What song would you recommend?
I would say let's play Don't Wait for the Wizard.
Don't Wait for the Wizard. Here it is. Greyhawk. Thank you so much, Derek. We'll see you on the 26th.
Hell yeah. Thank you, brother.
The power is in you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.